Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is another update on the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. I'm looking at the impact on the global economy, and in today's video, I want to talk about Russia's debt and the possibility of Russia defaulting. Now, Russia has sovereign debt of around $40 billion that it has issued into the international bond markets. And I previously posted a video talking about the possibility of Russia defaulting on that debt. Now, that video was made just after the financial sanctions were introduced. And the assets that Russia was holding outside of Russia, a lot of which were in currency, were all frozen. And at the same time, Russia were also excluded from the SWIFT payment system. So it looked at that stage like Russia would automatically be unable to service those bonds. However, it now transpires that those assets that were frozen by the US authorities have been available for servicing the debt. So Russia has actually been making its payments so far. However, we've now just heard that the US authorities have decided that they no longer want to allow Russia access to that capital. And so we're now at a situation where we may genuinely see Russia go into default. So in this video, we'll have a look at Russia's outstanding debt. We'll look at the repayments that are coming up over the next few months. We'll talk about the assets that have been frozen, what access has been allowed so far, and what the current situation is. We'll then talk about what options Russia has right now, and then what a default will actually mean for Russia in the international markets and what implications it would have going forward. And then finally, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think is most likely to happen over the next 3 to 6 months and what the implications of that are for the global financial markets. So before we get into all of that, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video if you're enjoying the content, and also to subscribe if you haven't done so already. And don't forget, I always include chapters in my videos. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look in the description below where you'll find links to Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon. And I'm delighted to advise that today's video is brought to you in conjunction with Atlas VPN. As you'll know from watching previous videos, Russia is a large country that has a wealth of natural resources, and it's one of the biggest exporters of both oil and natural gas. But despite all the natural resources, it's built up international debt of around $40 billion, which is spread across 15 different bond instruments. Now, those bonds have a variety of maturity dates and coupons, some of which are due during 2022. At the start of this conflict, Russia had around $4.7 billion of debt obligations that it needed to pay for the rest of 2022. Over the last 10 years or so, Russia has been building significant reserves and currently has around $640 billion worth of reserves spread across foreign currency and gold. Around 50% of those reserves, so just over $300 billion, were held in overseas banks in the form of currency. And on the 24th of February, which was the date that the invasion started, it was announced that all of those assets had been frozen. So the $300 billion that Russia had been stockpiling in advance of any potential military action was suddenly no longer available to them. And that caused Russia a problem because they had these bond obligations and they knew that they needed dollars to keep servicing that debt. Now, before we go on any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Atlas VPN, and share with you the incredible $1.99 3-year subscription deal that they've offered to Joe Blogs viewers on a limited time basis only. So what is a VPN and why do you need it? Whenever you go onto the internet, you leave a virtual footprint and you run the risk of being hacked or somebody spying on your every move. A virtual private network makes all your internet traffic travel through an encrypted tunnel and protects you from spying, public Wi-Fi dangers, and hides your IP address and online activities. So VPNs are a great idea from a security protection because it makes sure that whenever you're online, nobody can see what you're doing and you can't get hacked. But the fun thing about VPNs and the reason that I use Atlas VPN is that it can hide your location. And that means you can access services that are not available in your home market. So sometimes Netflix takes off shows in one area but leaves it on in other areas. So if you're in the US and they delete one of your shows, but it's still showing in Australia or the UK or India, then you can change your location using the Atlas VPN and then you'll still be able to watch those shows because Netflix will think that you're in a different country. So Atlas VPN offers you some really great benefits, and it's available on unlimited devices for the cost of $1.99 a month for a 3-year subscription. So please have a look at the link in the description below, and you've got a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not happy, you can cancel the service within 30 days. Now, at the time the sanctions were announced, it looked like it was going to be very difficult for Russia to be able to service that debt because they couldn't access the capital. However, it now transpires that the US authorities have been allowing the frozen cash to be released to make the bond repayments. And I guess that the logic on that is that the international bondholders are all financial institutions and banks, and therefore are not seen to be linked in any way to providing facilities or funding any war efforts. And so this has been deemed to be an allowable transaction by the authorities. If we look at this table, it shows all of the interest and principal payments that are due on the Russian bonds for the whole of 2022. So initially, we expected a potential default to occur on the 16th of March if Russia was unable to find $117 million to be able to make these payments. However, the first five payments on this table, which amount to $731 million, have all been settled using the cash that is frozen. So using those reserves that Russia had built up, the authorities were happy for $731 million to be moved from those reserves to all of the holders of the bonds in settlement of the interest and the principal that was due. So if those arrangements had been allowed to be continued, then Russia was unlikely to default on any of its bonds because it's got $300 billion of reserves that are now frozen, and the obligations this year are only $4.7 billion. So it would easily have been able to cover all of those costs just from the frozen assets. However, over the last week or so, there's been a lot of negative press about what's going on in Ukraine, and the governments around the world are now reassessing the sanctions and looking to see whether or not they can impose more severe sanctions on Russia to encourage them to stop this war. And the US authorities have now announced that they will no longer be allowing access to the frozen funds to meet any of the bond obligations. So this is putting more pressure onto Russia to find dollars to meet these payments. One of Russia's responses to all of the sanctions that were introduced was to demand payment for natural gas supply in rubles. So at the start of the conflict, we saw the value of the ruble fall significantly as the international markets closed to Russia and demand for ruble fell. Now, at that stage, the markets were unsure what was going to happen with regards to the purchase of natural gas and oil from Russia. And there were concerns that the European Union would turn its back on Russia and there would be no demand for ruble at all. However, it soon transpired that a lot of the countries like Germany and Italy and Turkey were happy to keep taking natural gas and happy to keep buying oil because it was too difficult for them to change their infrastructure overnight. So that meant that the trade continued, and therefore there was still some confidence in the ruble, and we saw the value of the ruble recover somewhat. However, in order to increase the value of the ruble further, President Putin came out and stated that he now wanted all future payments for natural gas to be made only in rubles. Now, this potentially was a breach of contract because the contracts that are in place with countries like Germany and Italy, who take large amounts of gas directly from Russia, stipulate that the payments have to be made either in US dollars or euros. So rubles is not a defined currency, and therefore demanding payments in rubles is actually a breach of the contract. Now, Russia has been happy to stand its ground, firstly, because it wants to force the Western world to have to buy rubles to pay it, because the only institutions that have rubles right now are the Russian banks, who are actually sanctioned. So this would mean breaking the sanctions. To get hold of those rubles, all of the European countries would actually have to start trading with the banks who they've already sanctioned. So this is a bit of a catch-22 situation for Europe. But the other factor is that they want to increase the value of the ruble. They want to drive up demand for the ruble and to try to displace the dollar as the global currency for energy. So at the moment, if you're doing an energy deal, if you're buying oil or natural gas or any other form of raw material energy, then most of those contracts take place in US dollars. And Russia wants to change that. They would like the ruble to be the default currency. And by stating that all purchases of Russian energy have to be in rubles would be the first step on that road. So that's what's been happening with regards to energy. But Russia have now taken this approach to their bond obligations. and they've now made an offer to dollar bondholders to buy back those bonds in Russian rubles. Now, the terms of the bond stipulate that any repayment has to occur in US dollars, and therefore repaying in rubles would constitute a default efficiently. So it's extremely unlikely that any of the international bondholders will take up this offer, but it's another way of Russia coming back with a counteroffer and trying to establish the ruble as an international currency. It's trying to get onto the same level as the dollar. So what options does Russia have now that the US authorities have blocked all access to their overseas foreign currency reserves? Well, Russia does have US dollars within Russia, so it does have the means to be able to find this cash to make those payments. And the US is really trying to force Russia's hand to use up any spare cash that it has for bond repayments rather than any form of military action. So it's trying to drain Russia's reserves to make life as difficult as possible for the conflict. So in theory, Russia could use any dollars that it has elsewhere in the world to make these payments. But that's pretty unlikely because President Putin has come out and he's trying to present the ruble as an international currency. He's asking people to pay him in rubles. He's offering to pay other items in rubles. And therefore, he's very unlikely to make a payment in US dollars from anywhere apart from the US dollar accounts in America. So the most obvious option would be for Russia to make all of these payments in rubles. Work out what the US dollar equivalent is and then send that amount of rubles directly to the international banks. Russia would then have a strong case to say that they had actually met those repayments, and then they would be talking about a technical default. So technically, under the terms of the bond, you're not allowed to pay in anything other than US dollars. So they would be technically in breach. But if you're a bondholder and the issuer of that bond has made a full payment in another currency, then in any other situation, that would be acceptable. That would be something that would be allowable and you would waive the right of the technical default. Now, obviously, the US may not do that. They may want to force Russia to be in a default situation, but Russia would have a strong case to say that they actually met their financial obligation and that this was just a technicality, really driven by the fact that they didn't have access to the US dollar accounts that are now being frozen as part of these sanctions. So what is a default, and will Russia care if they're officially put into default? Well, clearly so far, Russia are taking this seriously. They've had 5 repayments that they could have waived. They could have walked away from all of those obligations that I showed you on the table earlier as soon as the sanctions were imposed against them. But they clearly want to keep making the payments. So what they're trying to do is keep what's going on in Ukraine entirely separate from everything else that they're doing. And they want to keep current on their bond. They want to keep their creditworthiness in the global markets. And the reason that they're doing that is that they know that this conflict will end at some point, and they want to be able to access the bond markets in the future to raise capital for projects and investments and variety of other international initiatives. And Russia has been here before. In 1998, it defaulted on its domestic debt. It didn't actually default on its international obligations, but it was in default on the ruble bonds that it issued in Russia. And we saw a deep depression in Russia, and they struggled for a long period of time after that situation occurred. So Russia is trying to preserve its international reputation. It wants to be seen as a country that's a good credit risk. Now, in terms of what happens if it does default, this isn't the same situation as when a company defaults and you would send somebody in to take over control of that company and you would start selling the assets to realize some cash to pay off all of the bondholders. That doesn't really work in a country situation. However, there are some examples of that happening. So when Argentina defaulted on its debt, it was reported that a military vessel was seized and sold and that one of the government aircrafts was also seized. Now, Russia's quite a big, aggressive nation, and I think it's unlikely that anybody will try to seize any of their military assets. But they do have some overseas assets that would be at risk. I recently highlighted the fact that Gazprom owns 8 natural gas storage facilities in Europe. 4 of those are in Germany, and these are large underground caverns where large amounts of natural gas are stored and then used as and when it's needed. So they do have some assets that are outside of Russia that potentially could be at risk, but these are relatively small. And I think it's unlikely that the bondholders will look to seize those assets because these bonds are completely unsecured. So realistically, the only course of action for bondholders would be to go through the courts and to try to get their money back. And again, Argentina is a good example of that. I recently reported on a US hedge fund that had pursued legal action against Argentina for the recovery of some bonds, and it took 15 years to get a settlement on that case. So this is likely to take a long period of time and be very painful for all these bondholders. So the bottom line on all of this for the bond markets is that really the only thing that can be done against Russia is to not allow them any future access to the bond markets. And that's exactly what Russia is trying to avoid. They want to keep their creditworthiness. They want to have the ability to raise more bonds in the future. So that's really the key issue here. All of the threats about taking assets and taking legal action are all pretty toothless because Russia won't really care about those sort of issues, but they will care about the fact that they can't raise any more finance in the future. So that really will remain as the key area of focus here. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I think it's really interesting that the US authorities have been allowing the frozen assets to be released to keep making the payments on the Russian bonds. When the sanctions were first announced, it looked very clear that those assets were frozen and nobody could touch them. So I think it's surprising that they allowed the money to be drained off to keep paying the bondholders. But clearly the US have now changed their position on this and they're no longer allowing any access to any of those assets. So this really puts the ball back into Russia's court in terms of how it's going to service the debt. And the US is really trying to make sure that if Russia has any spare dollars, that it's using those dollars to pay the bondholders rather than buying any more arms or bringing in any mercenaries or any of those sort of things that that money could be used for. Now, Russia's in a very unusual situation because when we're normally talking about countries being on the brink of default, it's because they're bankrupt. They don't have any money. They don't have any access to foreign currency. And generally, the country's in a state of disarray. But that's not the situation for Russia. Russia has a lot of assets and it's still being paid large amounts of money by all of the countries who are taking natural gas and oil from them. So the country is solvent and it does have access to cash. But what will be interesting here is whether or not President Putin decides to force the issue on the Russian ruble. And if they start making these payments in rubles rather than dollars and euros. Now, if that happens, they will technically be in default. But the reality of the situation is that they will have made those payments. They will have settled the debt, albeit in a different currency. So from the international bond market's perspective, even if a default is called, I think the creditworthiness of Russia is not the issue here. They will be making those payments. They will be seen as being still creditworthy. They just will have a technical default against their name. And I think that overall, the debt markets would overlook that in the long term. I don't think they would see Russia as being uncreditworthy if they make the payments in a different currency. Now, the geopolitical issues are a completely different matter. Whether or not the bond markets want to deal with Russia again from a reputational point of view is a completely different story. But just from a credit perspective, making a payment in rubles is essentially the same as making a payment. Now, of course, Russia haven't actually made those payments yet, so this is speculation. And the fact that they've missed a payment just now doesn't actually mean that they're in default immediately. There is a 30-day grace period on all bonds. So the payments that were due on the 4th of April were not made, and Russia is now running down its 30-day grace period. So as long as they pay before the end of the 30 days, then technically they will have settled those debt obligations. If they make that payment in rubles, that will be the interesting point as to whether or not the bondholders decide to call a default and start legal action against Russia. So we'll have to wait and see what happens, and it'll be fascinating to see if those payments are actually made in rubles and then what the reaction is from the bondholders if that happens. So I'll keep you posted on any further news and developments as and when I hear them. If you've liked what I've said today, then please give me a thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already. Just a quick update on Joe Blogs 2. The subscriber levels are going really well, but we still need some more watch time. We've got to get to that 4,000 hours of watch time. So if you've got a spare couple of moments, please jump onto the channel, press play on one of the videos, watch for a few minutes or just leave it running while you go off to have a cup of tea, and we'll get closer to that 4,000 hours. And then we can start this experiment and see whether or not we can find some YouTube stars of the future who are watching this right now thinking, I think I might have a go at that, and you know, I could be a success. So hopefully that's you. Hopefully you're one of the people who's thinking about making some videos. If you're not, then start thinking about it. It's pretty easy. All you need is a phone and a microphone and some ideas, and that's it. You're done, ready to go. So thanks for watching this video all the way to the end again.